Christine Lagarde has published multiple articles at the ECB openly saying like there is an urgent need to channel retail savings into EU capital markets. Like that just screams they're going to freeze your savings. A lot of this is spreading to America. The two stable coins that have been kind of given a monopoly over the creation of money in America have both been guilty of freezing people's savings. I am getting notifications on my iPhone telling me that because I have an Australian YouTube account, I'm going to be forced into a digital ID in 4 days' time. I like to walk through a thought experiment. A $4 million Bitcoin by 2040 is a failure, right? Now, that's what the Powell Law predicts. To anybody who says you need 10 Bitcoin to retire, all of them think Bitcoin's just digital gold. I think Bitcoin's going to be way closer to $50 million a coin. And that's ignoring hyperinflation. That's today's dollars. All of a sudden, 0.1 Bitcoin is 5 million big ones. And I mean, you can retire anywhere with 5 million big ones.
What's up, guys? 70,000 of you guys keep coming back every single month, but 71% are not subscribed. So you're gonna miss out on some of the great Green Candle content. So make sure that you're hitting that subscribe button with the bell notification so you get notified every time I drop a video. All right, now let's get back into this great interview. Bing bong, I am back with another edition of the State of Bitcoin podcast. I normally say the man, the myth, the legend, but we've got Luke here again, and I don't think he necessarily fits that description now that he's back on the podcast. But Luke, you've been covering a lot about the EU potentially freezing the savings accounts, and I think there's a lot of craziness going on there. So why don't you dive in to everything that you're seeing in the EU right now and why everybody should be keeping a close eye on the developments going on over there.
Yeah, so the scary thing is it's not just in the EU. A lot of the laws, the regulations, the ideas of a savings cap being talked about in Britain and the EU, you're slowly starting to see a lot of these similar narratives being rolled out in America. So again, this is like a worldwide thing right now. As we're recording here on December the 6th, I am getting notifications on my iPhone telling me that because I have an Australian YouTube account, I'm going to be forced into a digital ID in 4 days' time. So what we're seeing is a global push. And what we're seeing is like a global attack when it comes to not just your online communications, but how you spend and hold your money online. So we've got the European Central Bank trying to roll out a CBDC. And what's really interesting is Christine Lagarde, the head of the European Central Bank, is openly praising China's model of a CBDC, saying it's been a success for all the people. And that's just concerning. I mean, Christine Lagarde has published multiple articles at the ECB openly saying like there is an urgent need to channel retail savings into EU capital markets. Like that just screams like they're going to freeze your savings if you really kind of read between the lines. So the EU's been pushing for this central bank digital currency, and now the EU is also pushing for something called chat control. This essentially ends encryption all across the European nations. I made a video on this today, and there's 22 of the 26 European nations and countries have agreed to essentially outlaw encryption. So that means any photo on your phone, any message you send your grandma or your grandpa, or anything you say on Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, it's all being surveilled. And it's all going to be used to build a social credit score. I know that sounds like a big and bold statement, but just look at what the UK is doing right now. The UK has a bank called NatWest that's literally calculating people's carbon credit footprints. So if somebody's eating too much steak, you can see all of their transactions that they do each month has been tracked. It has a number next to it. It's a carbon credit score. So I think we've got the EU pushing towards Orwellian rules when it comes to communications and money, and the UK is doing the same thing. I mean, the Bank of England, the kind of first thing that really raised the alarm bells for me when I started looking into this rabbit hole was the UK's central bank white paper they wrote in 2021 titled The Execution of a Bail-In. It wasn't like a theoretical framework. It's an actionable guide of how they steal everybody's money in a banking crisis. So I think we've got the UK now talking about mandatory digital IDs to work. They're talking about savings caps on digital pounds. That's the same thing being used in the EU. They're talking about the need for 2,000 to 3,000 euro savings caps on their CBDC. And I just think a lot of this is spreading to America. The two stable coins that have been kind of given a monopoly over the creation of money in America have both been guilty of freezing people's savings. That's Tether and that's Circle. So I'm really kind of skeptical here that we've supposedly got America on the side of freedom. Trump's been talking about, you know, outlawing CBDCs. So he might outlaw CBDCs, but if he welcomes Tether and Circle, USDC, into being the digital currencies for America, if they have the power to freeze users' funds, like both Tether and Circle have done multiple times, what's the difference there? That is a CBDC. That is essentially a central bank digital currency. It is the thing that everybody's scared of. Everybody hears central bank digital currency and they're fearful, naturally. But is there a big difference between private bank digital currency and CBDC if both entities are essentially controlled by one or two people at the top of the pyramid who kind of pull the strings and tell you who can and who can't transact? I don't think there's a major difference. From first principles, it's very basic. It's digital currency that can be frozen. And I think that's going to be rolled out worldwide, Brandon. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, and I think a lot of people haven't really been talking about that the US and the UK just made a crypto task force, like a joint task force to band together, essentially. And they lined it out there that it was to help with stopping the nefarious activities that could all happen. And so even though, you know, the narrative in the United States is that Trump and we're very pro crypto and everything like that, pro freedom. It is interesting when you look at the connections between Tether and the United States government. I mean, Howard Lubnick and Cantor Fitzgerald, they were holding the funds of Tether for a while. Tether is one of the largest holders of U.S. government bonds. And I think, you know, looking at the connections between these, stable coins, I mean, I don't see where you're wrong in this case, because essentially it's just privatized banking and now they're getting more intertwined. I mean, we saw Bo Hines leave from the government sector to the private sector and then all of a sudden become the CEO of USAT because the USDT wasn't USA compliant. So I think, you know, when you're starting to connect a lot of these dots, it is very interesting to me. And, you know, obviously Bitcoin could be a way around this, but do you see them using Bitcoin almost as this back door where they're essentially, you know, being more friendly, but then trying to sneak in these CBDCs, even though, you know, we have in the United States, for example, they're trying to roll out policies and saying that there will be no CBDCs. Do you think that this is essentially just the backdoor way to use stablecoins to do this?
So I got a complicated answer to that question. Before I answer it, I will remind you, Howard Lutnick, wasn't he neighbors with Jeffrey Epstein? I'm not sure whether that's true, but I mean, a lot of people, I think you recently did a really good interview with Simon Dixon, and he kind of lays out how the proof of weapons network is involved and, you know, getting their tentacles into a lot of these Bitcoin companies. And I think Howard Lutnick, Cantor Fitzgerald, they're kind of partnered up, so to say, to create this Bitcoin company 21. And I think that's just an interesting tidbit there. Howard Lutnick, neighbors of Jeffrey Epstein, who knows, could just be a coinky dink. Maybe he's just neighbors, or maybe he's going with Island Boy onto his island there and doing all sorts. But what I will say is, to answer your question, I've long thought that America would be one of the first nations to actually adopt Bitcoin. So if you actually think about it from first principles, I know how controversial this will sound, but I actually think America adopting Bitcoin actually helps America extend their global reserve currency hegemon much longer than most people think. And the reason why is kind of this involvement with stablecoins. So in 2022, I wrote like a 10,000 word, stupidly long essay titled The Bitcoin Milkshake Theory. Wrote that in 2022. Anyone can Google it. I've seen a few people try to use that same narrative more recently this year, but I've been looking at this for years. And if you think about it from first principles, why would America have a debt problem? Well, a lot of people say they have a debt problem. What they really have is a demand problem. They could have $100 trillion of debt if there's $100 trillion of demand for US debt. The demand problem is what will get America into a hyperinflationary event. The only reason you have hyperinflation, it's not because governments print too much money. It's because they print too much money for the amount of demand there is in the market. So the problem with America is you have the largest holders of US treasuries, Japan and China, now becoming the biggest sellers of US treasuries in 2024 and 2025. So that is where America gets itself into trouble. Now, the reason how Bitcoin and stablecoins fixes this is I believe that in countries that adopt Bitcoin, they're also going to adopt stablecoins. So let's think about that for a minute. Which countries around the world have the highest US dollar stablecoin adoption? It's Pakistan, it's Argentina, it's Turkey. Now, what are some interesting correlations that you see in those countries? They have a terribly weak local currency. The Pakistan rupee, the Argentinian peso, and the Turkish lira are all incredibly weak currencies. And all these countries have super high Bitcoin adoption. So I don't know whether it's a chicken or the egg. I don't know which comes first. But my thesis is that if a country like Turkey were to adopt Bitcoin as legal tender, they would also have to adopt US dollars to use as a medium of exchange and a unit of account while Bitcoin is still too volatile. And I think that kind of thesis, this is again a thesis I've had for multiple years, this is playing out. The countries with the most Bitcoin adoption have the most stablecoin adoption. And I just think it's a natural thing to happen. Like once the Turkish lira has 200, 300, 500% inflation, all of a sudden, Bitcoin's going to be adopted as a store of value. But if Bitcoin's still moving by 200, 300, 400, 500% per year, it's going to be too volatile to use as that pricing mechanism. So that's where US dollars, and in particular, US stablecoins, will be adopted as that unit of account or that medium of exchange. And if all of these US dollar stablecoins, if they are 100% backed by US treasuries like Tether, and like Circle R, all of a sudden, you've got China and Japan selling hundreds of billions of dollars of US treasuries, but now you've got stable coins like Tether and Circle buying hundreds of billions of dollars of stable coins. And all of a sudden, in 2022, I called the stable coins, I called them Uncle Sam's sugar daddy. They are the way that Uncle Sam, America, can deleverage its debt. So I think this is kind of a natural process. I think the writing's kind of been on the wall since 2022 when Tether was like 20% backed by safe US treasuries and 80% backed by other more risky commercial paper. Despite what the Tether truthers and the Doombergs and the Doomers were saying about Tether in 2022, they were clearly buying more US treasuries and they were clearly selling their Chinese paper, which is why I wrote this article in 2022 and I said, watch this space. If Tether keeps buying US treasuries, eventually the American government will come to the realization that protecting Tether and even partnering with Tether and these other stablecoin companies will be the economic wildcard that helps to extend the US dollar's global reserve currency much longer than most people think. And now look at where we are. Tether's holds more treasuries than my home country of Australia with 30 million people living there. So I think, I'm not sure if that answered your question, but I think from first principles, America is going to be incentivized to adopt US dollar stablecoins and Bitcoin because it helps them prolong that global reserve currency. I think it's less of like a backdoor confiscation thing, although I think it's like a kill two birds with one stone. I think America's like number one plan, if they're thinking rationally about this, is to extend the dollar's reign. I like to think that they're thinking about the 4D chess game that I just rambled about for 5 minutes. But I think a nice side benefit of that 4D chess game is you also get more control over people's money. By wrangling Tether in and partnering up with the DOJ like Tether has to freeze different accounts and massive multi-million dollar transactions like they have previously, it also kind of gives America the control that it wants over money.
Yeah, and I've always seen like the way that the United States has moved with Bitcoin, you know, like requiring KYC, trying to make it like more difficult for these non-custodial Bitcoin Lightning wallets to come in as something of just they don't hate Bitcoin necessarily. They just want to know where you're moving it so they could either tax you later or potentially tell this company to stop and freeze said account. But, you know, Checkmatey, probably the best Australian in Bitcoin, maybe outside of Peter Dunworth. I really can't think of any other good Australians in Bitcoin outside of those two guys. He really opened my eyes to this where it's really just... What if I told you never had to sell your Bitcoin? Instead, you can borrow against it with Salt Lending. Why give up your hard-earned Bitcoin when you can unlock its value without letting it go? With Salt, you get secure Bitcoin collateralized loans with no credit checks, no prepayment fees, and best of all, no rehypothecation. Salt has had zero customer collateral losses since it launched. Salt was the first platform to offer Bitcoin collateralized loans starting way back in 2016. Today, they offer tailored options for both individuals and businesses. And now introducing Salt Shield, the no liquidation solution. No forced liquidations during the lifetime of your loan when you're enrolled with Salt Shield. This just launched at the Bitcoin conference in Las Vegas, and it is next level peace of mind. For Green Candle listeners only, head to saltlending.com/green-candle for this exclusive offer for your Bitcoin collateralized loan. You can get cash for your Bitcoin today. Salt Lending, secure, trusted, proven. Maybe outside of Peter Dunworth, I really can't think of any other good Australians in Bitcoin outside of those two guys. He really opened my eyes to this where it's really just, you know, these poor countries that are suffering through hyperinflation that are essentially going to be propping up the dollar because, like you pointed out, Argentina, Turkey, like they don't want their own currency. They want the best fiat currency out there. And right now it is the dollar. So it makes sense. And then, you know, all these poor countries are just going to keep using all of these stable coins like Tether. And then Tether is just going to keep buying up that government debt. So I think over time, like you're nailing it on the head here that these poor countries are essentially just going to allow the US dollar to reign supreme for a lot longer. And that's why the Trump administration really made a huge effort to pass the Genius Act first and not go through the Bitcoin Strategic Reserve or that route either. And to be quite honest, we haven't really seen much in the Bitcoin Strategic Reserve outside of confiscating Bitcoin, which I think is another really interesting aspect. So how do you think, you know, that is all playing in together? Do you think like, you know, they're actually looking at Bitcoin or they've just been looking at the dollar as the stable coins as a way to prop up the dollar, and Bitcoin is just, I guess, the marketing ploy behind it?
So there's multiple scenarios. I'm going to start with a scenario that I hope is true. So Donald Trump announced Strategic Bitcoin Reserve 10 months ago in March. Sorry, that's 9 months ago. They said within 30 days, the US Treasury and all government parties and facilities must give me, the president, a report to show us how much Bitcoin America holds within 30 days. That was signed in March. We still haven't got that report. So we don't know how much Bitcoin America holds. We also were told we're going to get a Strategic Bitcoin Reserve. I think a lot of us Bitcoiners just thought that that implied that America were going to go out there and buy 1 million coins and execute the bill that Cynthia Lummis keeps talking about, the Bitcoin for America Act, or even the more crazy and the more bullish bill that RFK was talking about. I think it was like a 4 million Bitcoin buy, which would be crazy. Now, that hasn't happened. Now, I think what I like to think and what I hope is happening Again, I'm not American, but I like to think I'm part American, because I think America, if I was allowed to live there, I'd live there. I don't know if you guys would let me, Brandon, but I would love to live there, because I just love, I love what the country stands for. And I think if freedom remains alive in America, then the world has a chance to escape from like what Europe and Australia and Canada's talking about. So what I hope is happening is America's buying a shitload of Bitcoin behind closed doors. And what I really hope is happening is when Trump signed this strategic Bitcoin reserve, the price of Bitcoin ripped from like 60K to 115K. And what I hope is happening is a few people tapped Donald on the shoulder and said, dude, chill. Look at the price of Bitcoin. It's running away. We want to privately fill our bags before we let this thing rip. And then I don't think it's a coincidence that in April, the next month, Trump starts talking about the tariff war and the global markets were selling off. Japanese yen carry trade was unwinding. We had that 20% correction in stocks. Bitcoin had that, from memory, it like had a prolonged chopping period. So I hope that America's buying Bitcoin. That's what I hope is happening. I also, I just want to pause. I don't want to get us in trouble. I like to think that they're buying Bitcoin behind closed doors. And I like to think they understand Bitcoin. I think Trump's hinted at enough things to maybe indicate that him and the Trump family at least knows what's happening. But then there's also the other side of the argument. I don't have a strong opinion on this, so I'll just show you the two sides. Then you have the flip side. Maybe Trump has no flipping idea what's going on. Maybe Barron's manipulating the markets and, you know, leverage shorting Bitcoin 10 minutes before he writes a tweet for Trump talking about 100% tariffs on China on October 10th. Because we all know that some anonymous whale loaded up $100 million short 2 minutes before Trump made a tweet on October 10th, and it saw hundreds of millions of dollars. No, it actually saw 19 billions of dollars wiped out and liquidated on October 10th. And that was kind of like the day that started, honestly, what kind of looks like, if you're a degen trader, it looks like the Bitcoin bear market. That could be a topic for maybe later on. A lot of people are convinced we're in a four-year bear market right now. But the market's been dumping ever since then. So there's a scenario that maybe the Trumps are just launching shit coins, launching meme coins. What did Trump launch the day before he got in office? Trump coin, Melania coin, his wife launched a shit coin. Scott Bessent got on the national news and said, yeah, no, we're not going to revalue gold and buy Bitcoin. We're going to stop selling Bitcoin, and we might confiscate assets to add to our strategic Bitcoin reserve, but we won't buy any more. Who remembers that interview he gave like 2 months ago? And then he quickly jumped on Twitter and he goes, oh, well, actually, maybe I slipped up on Fox News an hour ago. Whatever President Trump said is what we're going to do. We're pro-Bitcoin. It's like, oh, that's sketchy. So, I mean, there's also an ulterior explanation, and I don't know what's true, that maybe Trump has no idea. Maybe they're just going to confiscate all our assets. Maybe Tether and Circle having the ability to confiscate assets is just the American version of a controlled digital currency. And maybe they're just here to grift and pillage and, you know, pander to the Bitcoin crowd to get our votes. Because again, we were promised a strategic Bitcoin reserve in March. It is now December. There's no Bitcoin reserve. Bessent accidentally slipped up and said we've been selling a ton of Bitcoin. We don't have the report. We don't know how much Bitcoin America holds. And we are partnering up with the UK to create a crypto task force. And what else have we got happening in America right now that just screams Orwell? We've got Samurai wallet developers being imprisoned for writing code. What are we doing here? This is insane. So there's two stories there. I like to hope that America is just playing 4D chess and they're buying Bitcoin behind closed doors. But there's also a lot of evidence for those who want to paint the other narrative that, hey, maybe they have no idea what they're talking about. I don't know. Where do you lie on that debate or discussion or thought experiment, Brandon?
Yeah, I mean, I of course I want to hope that America is going to do right, but I mean, the one thing that they are doing right now is they're not letting you in this country, and I mean, I'm gonna do all I can to keep it that way, brother, to make sure that that's not gonna happen. But all jokes aside, I mean, I do think this does worry me. The US-UK partnership, I think, was something that nobody is really talking about. And I don't really see too many people honestly covering that side of it. And obviously, both what we're talking about with the UK right now, with the digital ID movement, all of these things, it's like, why would you partner with the UK when, you know, the whole origination of America was going against the United Kingdom and how they were just trying to control and tax like crazy. And so that's how this whole entire country started. And now we're just going to be like, all right, let's get back and join this crypto task force. And even though they did the Brexit, I mean, if you look at the similarities between the UK and the EU, I mean, the UK almost seems like it's worse than the EU at this point, as with the surveillance and everything. And I mean, you see the massive amounts of protests and everything like that. So that task force, I feel like, just got swept under the rug, and you don't hear very much media coverage around it. And that's where it worries me, like, and it keeps me up at night a little bit, just about all that. Of course, you know, I've got the hope that you know, the United States is buying Bitcoin. And, you know, the great Australian that I just had, Checkmatey, he did say that, you know, there is a giant, you know, it has to be multiple nation states, big players, central banks buying. So even though we had whales sell more Bitcoin than we've ever seen in a bull market, we had some giant behemoth buying Bitcoin behind the scenes. And it hasn't really come out. So, I mean, I've been speculating whether or not it's like Saudi Arabia. I mean, we have Eric Trump going all over the place saying all of these countries are buying Bitcoin. They just don't want to announce it. So, I mean, I feel like the Trumps know something. And, you know, they're launching their own publicly traded Bitcoin mining company. And so I would like to think that they're doing this and they, you know, at least the family knows what's going on. But at the end of the day, like, you know, have we gotten anything to believe that, you know, these politicians are going to do right? I mean, at the end of the day, you know, I don't necessarily trust politicians, even if you don't want to consider Trump a politician. You know, he kind of came in the first 4 years and said he was going to drain the swamp and do these things. Of course, we had a great economy, but I think he's learned from his lessons. And I think it's just such a new industry. Like, I'm kind of taking the wait and see approach at this point. So, you know, I think it is going to be very interesting to see how this plays out. But you said something about the bear market, Luke. I mean, you and I are always covering how much Bitcoin's getting taken off exchanges, the buying pressures that we're seeing. Something that I think that is interesting that I just saw was during this recent crash, the number of wallets with 10 million sats or 0.1 Bitcoin actually decreased, where the number of institutions with 1,000 Bitcoin or more went parabolic during this dip. So it seems like the big dogs are coming in and buying more Bitcoin. But I'm curious, do you think that we're in a bear market now and, you know, that supply shock is still a little ways away?
I honestly don't know. If I'm being completely honest with you, I think normally I like to think that I've been somewhat directionally correct with where the Bitcoin price is going to be in the next 3 months. Now, I never talk about short-term price. You never talk about short-term price because I think neither of our channels are about trading Bitcoin. But I like to say, look, I have no idea. And I say that publicly all the time. But privately, like directionally, like I like to think that I've been somewhat like close to predicting or having a grasp on where we're going next. But right now, like the next 3 months, I'm more uncertain than I've ever been. I could make a bear argument. I could make a bull argument. You could, like, if you had to ask me honestly, I'm probably like 70% thinking that we're still in a bull market. And 30% of me says, you know, maybe we're in a bear market. It doesn't mean 75% correction, you know, 12 months down like traditional bear markets. But I think there's a 30% chance that we're going to be stuck under 100 for the next 6 months, maybe. So I think my bear argument, the TA traders and the trading bros who are convinced we're in a bear market, they are right that when Bitcoin's gone below the 50-week moving average on the weekly chart, that has spelled a bear market. So we typically go down for 12 months and we correct by 70%. That happened in 2017, happened in 2021. And if you look at Bitcoin, and if you think Bitcoin is in a four-year cycle, so if you think Bitcoin peaks 12 to 18 months after a halving, well, we just had a halving in 2024. If 126K was the top, that means Bitcoin would have topped 18 months after the halving, and that's exactly what it's done in 2021 and 2017. So, like, there is, like, data there to, like, suggest, you know, maybe Bitcoin could literally be in a bear market, as dirty as it is to say. You could even make an argument the S&P 500 has gone straight up only for at least the past 6 to 9 months, so maybe it's due for a 10% pullback, or just a 20% pullback. Like, the chart looks ridiculous. It's literally gone straight up with nothing more than a 5% pullback for 6 months in a row. So, I mean, Bitcoin's crashed from 126 to 80, like 35%, and the S&P 500 never moved down more than 3%. It's really traded within 5% of a new all-time high during that correction. So then you can ask yourself, okay, if stocks trade down 10%, 20%, just a normal pullback in a bull market, what the hell does Bitcoin do if it just dropped 35% while stocks did nothing? I think you can make a bear argument. You could say AI's extended. Michael Burry's been wrong about a lot of things. He called Bitcoin tulip mania this week. So I think that kind of diminishes his credibility when he's shorting Tesla and Palantir. But there is no denying it. Like, Tesla and Palantir, they are extended. Even if you believe in the AI bubble, like, you can have pullbacks. So, look, I can make a bearish argument, but you can also make a bullish argument on the flip side of things. You could say that, hey, don't you think it's interesting that JP Morgan is recirculating a 45-day old report from MSCI that's kind of irrelevant on October 10th, literally minutes before we had that massive flash crash? Don't you think it's strange that JP Morgan is publicly attacking MicroStrategy and FUDing MicroStrategy? And then 2 days later, they release their very own, very first Bitcoin product, which is a Bitcoin 1.5x leverage note on top of BlackRock's iBit. And then in the same week, Bank of America adopts Bitcoin. We've got Charles Schwab adopting Bitcoin. And then there was another massive bank, that Vanguard, came out and ended a 2-year attack on Bitcoin and said, oh, well, actually, yeah, we said Bitcoin shouldn't be a part of a portfolio 2 years ago when the ETFs were launched, but here's your Bitcoin ETF on a big silver platter. We were wrong. Sorry. That all came out in the same week, days after JP Morgan was attacking Bitcoin. So on the flip side of things, you could make a bullish argument and you could say, hey, it's kind of strange that Bitcoin traded above 100K for 200 days. And then all of a sudden you see this coordinated FUD. Morgan Stanley made $100 million shorting Bitcoin. And then all of the banks flipped bullish on Bitcoin within the space of 3 days. And we've got Santa Claus rally coming. Q4 has historically been bullish for not only Bitcoin, but also the stock market. And then you've also got $2,000 Trump stimmy checks coming in mid-2026. Midterm elections are coming in 2026. Trump wants to juice the markets heading into those midterm elections. You've got Jerome Powell leaving the Federal Reserve in a couple of months. And apparently we've got a bullish pro-Bitcoin dude being installed into the Fed.
Last bull run, we had exchanges blow up. You saw FTX, Celsius, BlockFi, you name it. But the true power of Bitcoin is getting it off an exchange into cold storage. This bull run, I'm trusting Trezor, the company that's been around for over a decade, and they just had a brand new release of the best hardware wallet in the game, the Trezor Safe 7. It's got the first audible secure element. No other hardware wallet has this. On top of it, I travel a lot, so I need an easy way to connect my Bitcoin hardware wallet to my laptop, phone, what have you. Therefore, it is the easiest way and has the best connectivity to access your Bitcoin. This is truly how you become your own bank, and the best way to do that is with a Trezor Safe 7. So you could go to the affiliate link down below and get yourself one right now And do it quickly because they are flying off the shelves, folks. So do it with the easiest and best way to get your Bitcoin off exchanges. So go to the affiliate link down below, get yourself a Trezor Safe 7, and get your Bitcoin off exchanges in the easiest way possible. All right, enough for me. Let's get back to the show.
Those midterm elections. You've got Jerome Powell leaving the Federal Reserve in a couple of months. And apparently we've got a bullish pro-Bitcoin dude being installed into the Fed. You've got QT ending in December. That kind of implies QE's come in. Global central banks did more rate cuts last month than they did in 2008. So you can also make an incredibly bullish argument that honestly, like, liquidity over the next 3 to 6 months looks as if it's going to increase. So what's really interesting about all of that is I also think the four-year liquidity cycle has actually kind of been extended. So I'm not an expert on this, so again, caveat, but like the way the US is issuing debt, rebuying debt, and issuing debt on the longer end of the yield curve, that kind of like extends the liquidity cycle a little bit as well. So you could also make an argument, and this is why I still think there's 70% chance we're in a bull market still, despite all of the four-year cycle bros like Ben Cohen, a million followers on YouTube, he's convinced we're in a bear market. You've got Bob Lucas, the four-year cycle guru. He's pretty bearish these days. He sounds at least 90% bearish. You've got Leah Hepburn. She's convinced we're in a bear market. You've got a lot of like notable big names convinced we're in a bear market. I still think there's a 70% chance we're in a bull market. I mean, if you're just looking at charts, absolutely. It looks horrific. It looks bearish. But I actually like think the Bitcoin four-year cycles, I think they 100% don't happen because of a power law. But I think they happen. I think they happen because of a liquidity cycle. And I think it's a little bit liquidity cycle and a little bit halving. But I think now that the halving's getting smaller and smaller, I think the liquidity cycle is making up a bigger and a bigger explanation of what drives Bitcoin. And I think all of these indicators, even the PMI liquidity cycle, hasn't expanded yet. You've got all these indicators suggesting the next 6 months is going to be really positive for liquidity. And we know that Bitcoin's the most correlated thing to liquidity. So I just talked for 20 minutes. What do you think about the four-year cycle debate, Brandon? What do you think,
Luke,
about?
I don't know if you farted or not over there, but it smells something. It smells a little fishy over here, dude. I think I'm smelling some price manipulation is what it's sounding like, brother. Because, I mean, you lined it everything out. And, I mean, I did a full breakdown on, you know, the MSTR and JP Morgan, Morgan Stanley coordinated attack. And I mean, I just don't believe in that many coincidences to believe that, oh, you know, MSTR has been having potentially one of the worst years it's ever had while Bitcoin is running up. And then, you know, all this FUD just comes out 45 days later, and then JP Morgan releases a competing product to MSTR's preferred stock options and, you know, preferred notes and everything like that. So, I mean, it just, the coincidences, I don't believe in them, man. So, and when you get into this game and you now have, you know, Bitcoin starting to get financialized, this is what happens is, you know, when everybody starts to think, oh, you know, you're going to have the four-year cycles. It's going to be October and Moonvember. And I mean, I was privy to that. I definitely thought that we would have a good Q4, and I thought everything was looking bullish towards the end of this year. And I was just waiting because we were chopping for such a long time. But, you know, once you start to get Wall Street come in and try to financialize Bitcoin like they're doing, this is where, you know, the big players, now they have so much money to toss around. They're the ones seemingly starting to control the market, right? I mean, the whales have been historically selling every single bull run like we're getting in. You know, maybe 100K was that barrier for a lot of them to come in, and they sold a lot. You know, we've never seen whales sell as much Bitcoin as we have, and that would crater the market in different time and like previous bull cycles. So I thought that it was actually pretty bullish that we were chopping for quite some time when we were looking at the on-chain data just of how much selling was going on by these whales. But now we had the big players coming in, and I think now they're getting a lot of control and buying power that it makes sense that they're going to start to try to manipulate things
And, you know, it's not like JP Morgan has ever manipulated a market or anything like that before, you know? It's not like they didn't get sued for, I think, what, like $1 billion or something crazy for manipulating the silver market or anything like that. I mean, don't dig into any of that, you know, because you're not going to like what you find. But, you know, watching all of this, it makes it very interesting. And do you think that this is also partially a play to attack companies that are putting Bitcoin on the balance sheet as well? Because, you know, last year when Trump got elected, there were 64. There's like close to 210 right now at the time of this recording. So we've just seen a parabolic increase with that. And it's a great idea in a bull market, but when you're starting to get it off the ground in a bear market, it makes it a little bit more difficult. So do you think maybe, just maybe, this was an attack on some of these other guys that said, hey, you know, we're going to attack the big guy like MicroStrategy and Michael Saylor, just essentially to make all the small guys watch out for what's to come ahead?
Yes, I made a video maybe 4 months ago. I thought it was strange that the day before, Strategy was potentially up for inclusion into the S&P 500. NASDAQ came out and they actually said, you know what? We're going to change the way that we look at these Bitcoin treasury companies, essentially making it more difficult for companies to get included into the NASDAQ. At the time, I made a live stream on the day and I said, this is interesting. This is either an attack on the treasury companies, or this is creating a monopoly for Strategy to be the one big dog in the indexes. Because right now, despite all of the FUD, Strategy is the one of the only Bitcoin treasury companies inside the NASDAQ. So that means what I think, well, I mean, it's not I think, it's basic economics. If Strategy is one of the only Bitcoin treasury companies in the NASDAQ, that means all of that capital, that passive capital that flows into all of the stocks in the NASDAQ 100, but also anybody looking for a treasury company play, all of their money now goes to Strategy. So it creates this monopoly-like effect. It creates this concentration. And my hypothesis months ago when this happened was this could be setting up America's strategic Bitcoin reserve. So we were just talking about, okay, it's been 9 months since Trump signed the EO. Where is the strategic Bitcoin reserve? Well, what if it is Michael Saylor? What if Strategy is the strategic Bitcoin reserve? What if, you know, one day Michael gets a tap on his shoulder and he says, all right, Michael, America can't go out there and buy 1 million Bitcoin on the open market. We'd move the price too much. Like you said earlier, there's only 2 million Bitcoin left on exchanges, depending on how you measure it. What if it's easy to just say, all right, Saylor, you're nationalized. Your company is nationalized, the Bitcoin on your balance sheet, hand it over to the Bitcoin government for X price. I mean, that doesn't sound that crazy. I mean, it might have sounded crazy a year ago, but I mean, the US government just set the precedent of nationalizing strategically important companies. They've got a 10% stake in Intel. I believe they also, there was something funny going on with a few of the rare earth companies as well in America. I don't remember the exact headline, but then you've also got, 2 months ago, the American government buying $40 billion of Argentinian pesos, yeah. The worst fiat currency you could ever buy. Why are they buying it? They haven't given us the reason, but that is all a strategic play. Argentina has a stranglehold on a lot of the rare earth minerals that are mined on the American continent, the whole continent. So that is only a strategic play. So is it outrageous for them to one day say, look, Michael, you've got 1 million Bitcoin on Strategy's balance sheet, which they will one day. That's what? 5% of the supply? I don't think it's outlandish for that to get nationalized. So I actually forgot the original question, but rein me back in there. Was there something I didn't answer? I got distracted
No, you basically were you know, lining out the potential of the coordinated attack and like bringing it in with Wall Street doing the funny games. But you did line out, you know, something interesting there. And I think it's all connected with the Argentinian play because, you know, a big tariff that the Trump admin actually didn't put on with China was the rare earth metals because of how much that China has for the exportation of all of these rare earth metals. And the only one that they get any other rare earth metals that are used in all of these various electronics from is Argentina. So it is connected in somewhat. And these tariff plays have been essentially this monetary war between China and the U.S. And so I think all of it has been interconnected in a sense. And it's really interesting, you know, watching how, I guess, this political clash seemingly plays out. But, you know, with this, right, I've kind of gotten the theory as well that China has some sort of incentive to attack Bitcoin now as well, because we've seen, you know, China launch the CBDC that we're talking about earlier. And, you know, I'm not sure how much you're diving into the China side of things, but, you know, they had the second most, they had the second most Bitcoin on the balance sheet for any nation behind the United States. Then the United States confiscated another like 190 or something thousand Bitcoin to put them at a little over 350,000 Bitcoin on the U.S. balance sheet, allegedly, right? If they haven't been selling it, you know, it's hard to verify all these things. But according to BitcoinTreasuries.net, I think it's a great site. But they, say the U.S. has about like 350 or so. But the unique thing of this is this happened right after the UK and the US formed this crypto task force. It was a Chinese citizen who was in the UK, and then for some reason this confiscation happened, and then it went on the United States balance sheet. So I have this theory that China was probably a little bit upset with that, because they want that Bitcoin, right? They wanted that other 150 to 180,000. I can't remember the exact number off the top of my head, but you know, the Chinese government potentially has something to play with. And then when you saw that giant sell-off that we saw here recently, a lot of it is lined out to a whale that was in the Asian trading timeline. So if you line out the, you know, just the time zones and everything. So I think all of this is kind of creating this monetary war, and I feel like a lot's going on behind the scenes that we're not really getting a lot of coverage about. So do you think that there's an aspect there where China would potentially try to crash the Bitcoin price in order to use it as almost an indirect attack at the United States?
Oh, that's spicy. I think... I haven't looked into whether the Bitcoin that America seized was the same Bitcoin that the UK seized, because there was headlines circulating a couple of months ago that the UK seized 60,000 Bitcoin from that Chinese lady who was inside the UK. So I don't know if those two seizures are related. I don't have the data on it, but I do know that China was pissed about the 60,000 Bitcoin that was seized by the UK. And they were like publicly like, hey, that's our Bitcoin, give it back. So I think like there's something there.
One of my absolute favorite things about Bitcoin is meeting all of you in person. So mark your calendars for February 28th and come down to where I've called home for the past 8 years, Tampa, Florida. The Bitcoin Bay Foundation is putting on the Sound Money Soiree. It's the third annual. It's a night of Bitcoin, poker, an open bar, and a silent auction. All support will go to Bitcoin Bay, a nonprofit that is creating a circular economy down in Tampa Bay, Florida. They're doing absolutely great things, and it's the Bitcoin community that I've called home for such a long time, and these guys are absolutely crushing it. So please do anything you can to support. Buy your tickets today. You can use promo code GREENCANDLE to get 10% off your Sound Money Soiree tickets.
So do you know anything about Bitcoin?
You guys can come down and see this ugly mug, come boogie on the dance floor, shake it, and now that Bitcoin's over 100K, you can do it all with your girlfriends. All right, enough from me. Let's get back to the show.
About the 60,000 Bitcoin that was seized by the UK, and they were like publicly like, hey, that's our Bitcoin, give it back. So I think like there's something there. I also think that... China and America, I think like that's the power struggle right now. If you believe America has 190,000 Bitcoin, well, China has the second most amount of Bitcoin. It's about 190,000 coins as well. So there is something there. Like they are clearly battling over who can hold the most Bitcoin. I honestly don't have a strong opinion on what's going on with China and Bitcoin and America and Bitcoin right now. I mean, I could make a strong argument and a strong conspiracy theory for either way. Like, if you look at the amount of gold that China's been mining and importing over the past 20 years, it's pretty much like public knowledge that China has 20,000 metric tons of gold in the country. Whereas they publicly say, oh, we've only got 2,000 tons. That's the public holdings of the PBOC, the People's Bank of China. So, like, there's a theory there that China's going heavy into gold and they're going to try to, like, attack Bitcoin. You know, they kick the miners out of the country and they're going the gold way. But then you could, and, you know, it makes, like we talked about earlier, it makes sense for America to go the Bitcoin way. Helps the US dollar with stablecoins buying US debt. But then on the flip side, like, I've made a ton of videos saying, don't you think it's strange that the Kingdom of Bhutan and Laos are both these tiny little countries that sit on the border of China and both their governments are openly and publicly mining Bitcoin? Like, is there some involvement there? Like, these countries are tiny. I'm sure China has some sway or control over these countries. Hong Kong is controlled by China. They've got a Bitcoin spot ETF, and publicly Beijing officials are okay with Hong Kong becoming the global crypto hub. Like, there's also an alternative answer here that says, hey, is China playing 4D chess and are they secretly still mining a lot of Bitcoin and getting all their neighbors to mine it? I honestly don't know. I have no idea what's going on there, but I think you can make an argument either way.
Yeah, there's definitely something there. I think that there is some sort of monetary, I guess, warfare back and forth. But I think at the end of the day, China just wants to be recognized by the United States as like an equal and not lesser, as the like the US is the main power. And, you know, I've heard a lot of different theories on all of this. And yeah, you know, it's just an interesting thought experiment. And it seems like Bitcoin's at the center. But you know, you already mentioned it. You make a lot of videos here and there, Luke. A video that you love to hit on is how much Bitcoin you need to retire. So I think that this is, you know, an interesting topic, and, you know, it always gets the people going here. But you recently have made a full-on move down to Latin America. So because they won't allow you here in the good, the great free country of the United States. But, you know, why don't you dive into, you know, I guess how you're looking at this as a young chap with a 40-year-old body that you've got going on here on utilizing Bitcoin as your retirement plan?
Yeah, I mean, I think you honestly need a lot less Bitcoin to retire than most people think. I like, that's my first principles answer. And like, a lot of people will hear the number that I'm about to say, and they're going to think you're crazy. But I think people only think the numbers that I talk about are crazy because they don't have the context. They don't actually understand how to value Bitcoin. They don't understand how to value a new money and a new technology. So like, from first principles, I think a lot of people just blindly believe the power law. I think they just blindly believe that Bitcoin is digital gold. Maybe it's worth 20 trillion or 30 trillion one day. Maybe it's worth $1 million or even $2 million in their lifetime. And they think that Bitcoin succeeded and that's its like end game. Because they see gold at 20 or 30 trillion, they think, okay, Bitcoin's better. Bitcoin could be 30 trillion, 40 trillion. And I agree with most people. If Bitcoin's just going to be worth $1 million or $2 million a coin, then you can't retire on 0.1 Bitcoin. Because if Bitcoin's $1 million, that's $100,000. You can't really retire on that. You need a little bit more. So that's kind of like my first caveat. You need to value Bitcoin correctly. And I've triggered a lot of people with this statement, and there's going to be a lot of people who turn off the interview right now if they haven't already. But I genuinely think a $4 million Bitcoin by 2040 is a failure. And people hear that and they're like, what? $4 million, that's such a big number. That's a 40x from here. And they just stop listening to me. They call me an idiot. They say I don't understand math. And I like to walk through a thought experiment. If Bitcoin's at $4 million by 2040, that would mean that Bitcoin has a market cap of $84 trillion, right? Now, that's what the power law predicts. Now, if you start thinking about things from first principles, $4 million, $84 trillion market cap. Today, there's $900 trillion of wealth and debt in the world. $900 trillion of money is looking for a place to be stored. It's looking for a store of value. So if Bitcoin is $84 trillion, it's less than 9% of global wealth after 32 years of being around. Now, you obviously, I think you need a global wealth is growing. It's growing by 5, 10% a year. It's growing a lot. Michael Saylor thinks that global wealth is going to be $4,000 trillion by 2045. So that's a 4X in global wealth. If you think global wealth is going to be $3,000 trillion, so 3Xs from here, that assumes that Bitcoin's going to be like 3% of global wealth in 2040. Now, you really start thinking about things and you're like, okay, $4 million Bitcoin sounds big. But in that world where Bitcoin's $4 million, it's an $84 trillion market cap. After 32 years, that assumes that you've still got $300 trillion of fiat money. That means fiat money is three times bigger than Bitcoin in 32 years. That also assumes that global debt is like $400 trillion. That assumes that there's a government bond market of multiple hundreds of trillions of dollars. Like, do we really think that in 15 years from now, government bonds?
Why would you ever hold generational wealth on a piece of paper? It doesn't make sense. You need a foolproof solution, and I've got it for you. You could get this as low as $25, and if you use promo code GreenCandle, you could get 10% off. Being around for 12 years, they've engineered the perfect and most easy to use solution. I've partnered with CryptoSteel to offer for you guys just that. It is the cheapest and most secure way to store your seed phrase. I don't know about you guys, but I don't have too many things where I think one ton is going to fall on this, but it could survive all of that and more. So go to CryptoSteel.com. You can use promo code GreenCandle. You can get 10% off your entire order if you go there today. So go ahead and protect your generational wealth and do it with CryptoSteel. All right, enough from me. Back to the show.
Multiple hundreds of trillions of dollars. Like, do we really think that in 15 years from now, government bonds, as they are so horrifically, they are a terrible investment. Do we really think they're still going to be three times larger than the Bitcoin market cap? I mean, government bonds just lost 50% of their value in the past 5 years. The TLT, the US Treasury bond, it's down 50% in value since 2020. The China Central Bank, Japanese Central Bank just dumped 30% of their holdings in the past 4 years. Like, if you extrapolate those trends out, what are government bonds worth in 20 or 30 years from now? I struggle to see a world where they're worth three times what Bitcoin is worth. So you just look at the economic side of things, and I can go on and on. Like, if you look at government debt defaults, for example, there's been 52 governments who have reached debt to GDP levels of 130% since the 1800s. Within 15 years of reaching that 130% Rubicon, that's like the end game. That is the measure. Once you get past 130, there's no going back. 51 out of those 52 governments defaulted on their debt within 15 years. The only country who hasn't explicitly defaulted is the Japanese, and the Japanese yen just lost 50% of its value against the dollar in the past 5 years. I mean, that's a default, let's be honest. So America hit that Rubicon, 130% in 2020. There's another 10 nations who hit that level in 2020. We have a very globally interconnected financial system. I believe if one country goes through a default, they all go through a default. That's what a global fiat currency system is. And I think if America goes through this default period before 2035, like, I'm not saying the US dollar hyperinflates before 2035. I don't think it's a 0% probability. I think it's a chance. But even if you just see high inflation, 5% inflation, 3% inflation like we have now for another 10 years, people aren't looking at rates of changes. They're not saying, okay, what happens if all central banks around the world keep buying gold and they keep selling government debt? Does it make sense for the government debt market to be $200 trillion in 12 years from now? Like the power law and a lot of these assumptions pretends like is logical. Like, this is my problem with these extrapolations. The power law is pretending that the world is going to remain in a vacuum. And what happened in the first 15 years of Bitcoin's life continues in the next 15 years. Now, I don't know what's going to happen in the future, but I think there's enough data to suggest we're in the second stage of an 80-year long-term debt cycle. Governments in 2020 hit an inflection point. Interest rates hit zero, their lowest level in 5,000 years of economic data. They're now printing money out of the wazoo. And we're in an environment where a government debt default is like 98.6% likely. So to just blindly assume that the debt market's going to be $300, $400 trillion in 2040 and Bitcoin's just going to be still acting in a vacuum, I think that's a misguided assumption. And I have triggered so many debates on Twitter with all the power law guys, all of them. And again, I love them, so I don't insult anyone, so I'll name them. You know, Giovanni, Plan C, Smitty, he's a friend of the channel. I love that they're doing work, but I've challenged all of them to, like, come up with an explanation. Like, why do we assume that all of this data is irrelevant? Like, the trends have clearly changed. Why do we assume that it's going to remain the same for the next 15 years? Haven't got a good answer for it. I just get insulted and told that I need to go back to school because I don't understand math. So I think there's, like, this long caveat to talk about how much Bitcoin you need to retire. But when you mentioned power law, I got triggered because there's another thing as well. There's technological assumptions. So if you look at how quickly the automobile took over the horses 100 years ago, happened in 10 years. Horses went from 100% of road transportation to like 1% in 10 years. The internet did something similar to email. Physical mail dropped by 50% in 10 years because of the internet. Smartphones got adopted in 10 years. The internet got adopted in 20 years. Like, what I'm trying to say here is technologies get adopted in exponential curves. Now, I understand there's a little bit of a difference and a little bit of a nuance with Bitcoin because it's a monetary asset. But every monetary transition, it's been an exponential transition. Every technological transition, it's been an exponential transition. Think about it. The smartphone went from 0 to 100% adoption or 0 to 90% adoption in 20 years. The internet from like basically 0 to 100% adoption in basically 20 to 30 years. Are we really going to think Bitcoin's going to go from 0% to 3% saturation in 32 years? I mean, Bitcoin is so much better than fiat money and government bonds and gold and all of this other trash. Just blindly saying, okay, let's extrapolate the past 16 years forward. We got $4 million Bitcoin in 2040. I mean, that's 32 years after Bitcoin was invented, and it would be 3% global saturation. So that's like to anybody who says you need 10 Bitcoin to retire, what I've noticed, it's just a trend, all of them think Bitcoin's just digital gold. And all of those guys just blindly assume Bitcoin's just digital gold. It's just going to be worth $1 million. And all of the caveats that I just laid out for why it could actually be different this time, I haven't got a good answer to any of those caveats. So that's, again, this is why I think you need way less Bitcoin to retire than most people think. Again, we know wealth distribution follows a Pareto's principle. There's 21 million coins. Even if you wanted to divide the 21 million supply evenly into little chunks of 0.1 Bitcoin, there's only 210 million people who can hold 0.1. So that's 3% of global population. You buy 0.1 Bitcoin, you're guaranteed to be in the top 2.5% of asset holders. And today in the fiat system, if you're in the top 1% or the top 2%, you're a millionaire and you can retire in most countries and most cities around the world. So, like, I think 0.1 is a good starting point. Now, I don't even have to get stupid bullish or stupid crazy to make the case for why you can retire on way less than that. I just think, like, if we're in a world where there's $3,000 trillion of wealth in 2040, like, I just think Bitcoin's going to be 50% of that. And I don't think that's a crazy thing to say. Like, I'm not saying real estate goes to zero. I'm not saying that. I'm saying real estate probably loses a lot of its monetary premium and it kind of trends back towards its utility value. Like, I'm still saying there'll be $100 trillion in real estate, maybe $200 trillion. I'm not saying fiat goes to zero. I still think there'll be $50 or $100 trillion of fiat money running around, but I really, really struggle, even when I'm being ultra conservative, to see a world where Bitcoin isn't half of global wealth or just 20% of global wealth by 2040. And if Bitcoin's, let's be conservative, a third of global wealth, so it penetrates the market for storing value 33%. Well, that means it's $1,000 trillion. Like, that's $250 billion. If there's 21 million coins, that would mean that Bitcoin's 50 million. And that's just if it captures 30% of global wealth. I think that's wildly bearish. And I actually think global wealth could expand by more than that. But let's just use conservative wealth growth numbers and conservative numbers for what Bitcoin can capture. I really just directionally, if you think about things from first principles, I think Bitcoin's gonna be way closer to 50 million a coin, and that's ignoring hyperinflation. That's today's dollars. And I just think directionally that's much closer than just blindly believing a power law. So that's why I think 0.1 Bitcoin could be really valuable, because if we're thinking Bitcoin could be 50 million a coin, all of a sudden 0.1 Bitcoin is 5 million big ones. And I mean, you can retire anywhere with 5 million big ones.
Yeah, and I think it's interesting when you look at the power law too, just how wide the bands are right now. I mean, it's like from 50K to like 400,000 right now or something crazy. So, I mean, like it's hard to make any decisions, I think, based off of that. But I agree with you too. I mean, I know you and I have gone on ad nauseum talking a lot about this, but I think, you know, when you look at Bitcoin, there's just nothing that is truly scarce like Bitcoin that nobody has been able to manipulate. Like, I mean, if you can make the argument of gold, well, there's been paper gold that they've issued. There's, you know, real estate we've just essentially built up, and there's so much land that we could buy extra or build extra houses if we actually wanted to, but we financialized real estate to make it to where it is today. And so, you know, as long as they don't do anything crazy, I guess, and try to issue credit or do anything else, I think at the end of the day, you know, when you look at the actual numbers, you know, 14 million wallets have 1 million sats or 0.01 Bitcoin or more right now. And there's 62 million millionaires in the world. And you lined out the stats. I mean, you know, physically, you just, you know, not everybody could really have even just 1 million sats here. So I think the scarcity aspect of Bitcoin, just humans haven't completely grasped. So I think once people start to figure that out, that's when things are going to go absolutely crazy. But Luke, you're always a pain to get a hold of, but you've been very generous with your time. So I appreciate you coming on here, brother. Why don't you tell people where they could find out more about you and listen to you talk into this microphone with your crazy haircut.
Oh, people don't want that. If you want to find me talking shit, I'm on YouTube, and that's where I spend all my time. But yeah, no, thanks for having me on again, Brandon. Always a blast catching up with you, whether it's in person or remote. I just challenge people just to think about things like from first principles. Like, don't blindly trust anyone. And I would just like encourage, like, really think about things. Like, I kind of got it out of Giovanni on Twitter the other day. He openly said, I've screenshotted all the tweets. The power law is about multiplying your Bitcoins and, you know, using advanced trading algorithms like covered calls to trade your Bitcoin and make money. Like, all I've found is anybody blindly supporting these models and insulting anyone who just asks questions about the models and their assumptions, they just get attacked and insulted. So I would just like be very careful out there. Everybody says, don't trust BlackRock with your Bitcoin, or be careful, JP Morgan wants your Bitcoin, or be careful, don't buy altcoins because they want your Bitcoin. I mean, There's proof all over my Twitter. All of the most, I think, the most dangerous people who want your Bitcoin are people saying, oh, no, but trust my model, bro. I'm a Bitcoin-only person. Oh, by the way, buy my trading course or trade your Bitcoin. I would just be very careful. Everybody wants your Bitcoins. I mean, I think it's a message on my channel and your channel, Brandon. Buy Bitcoin, put it in self-custody, back it up correctly and safely, and don't trade your Bitcoin. Don't give anybody your Bitcoin. I think that's kind of like a final note I'd like to leave things on. And, you know, if that's controversial to say, and if people are going to attack me and say that I'm unscientific for not trusting a power law trader, you can do that, and I'm going to continue saying what I think is the truth, even if it gets me attacked on my YouTube channel. So there you go, Brandon. That's all I've got for you.
All right. I'll be sure to leave a couple of hate comments on your next video as well, Luke. But thanks, brother. I always appreciate it, man. It's always a blast.
Thanks, man. Adios.
Thank you guys all for tuning in to another great episode of the State of Bitcoin podcast. If you found some value in this one, please hit that subscribe button and that like button to help send this one to the masses. And I've got a surprise for you guys. I've got two more episodes that you have the chance to watch here. So go ahead and click one of them, and I'll see you guys all at the next one.